Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Squiggly Career Podcast from Amazing If. I'm Sarah, one of the founders of Amazing If, and I'm joined by my fellow co-founder, Helen.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, and I know many of you will have listened before, but for any new listeners out there, this podcast is all about helping you to develop the skills you need to be successful in a squiggly career. And this week, we're talking about teams, what makes a brilliant team, why a team fails, what you can do to be part of and to build a brilliant team. And I will warn you now, I've realised as I started to think about this, this could get very sporty very quickly. I started to get really excited about, usually it's you with all the kind of cheesy quotes, but oh my God, when you get into team and sports, there is a world of interesting quotes and like stuff out there. So I've got a couple that I've got to share just, I think, to get out of my system. Otherwise, I'm just going to interrupt you.
If anyone is listening and is as unsporty as I am, please be aware that I will provide the counter to Sarah's sporting references for this podcast episode.
Plus, it's really topical. Being topical, Germany are out the World Cup. Hopefully
that's
by now. Actually, everyone who listens to this, it will have been like enough time afterwards. I was like, oh no, maybe I've just done a massive spoiler, but everyone will know that. So
you know,
fine.
When you just said it's topical, I was like, is it? Why? And in that question is the root of our differences on sportingness.
So if you are into your sport, there is an amazing documentary series called All or Nothing. Definitely watch it. It's on Netflix. And they follow teams for a season just to get into the dynamics of how a sports team works. They've done like the New Zealand rugby team, and they do quite a lot of American football teams. And there was this quote on the wall of an American football team, massive kind of premise that they have where they go for training. And it says, build the team you want to coach. And I was like, I had to get Tom to pause the program because I was like, I've got to write that down. Oh my God, I absolutely loved it. so that's my first favourite one. I've only got one more and then we can move on. Michael Jordan, basketball legend. I should have tested you then. I should have known. See, you'd have known Michael Jordan was a basketball player, wouldn't you?
Yeah, really tall guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thanks.
Tall and basketball. Brilliant. And he said, and I think this is actually really pertinent, talent wins games, but teamwork and intelligence wins championships. Oh, so good.
So
I get really excited. Do you know what? It's really interesting. I was thinking about teams because I'm really fascinated by team dynamics because I actually also love being part of a team. So even though I'm definitely an introvert, I get a lot of my energy and definitely recoup through spending time by myself. And time by myself is really critical to me to kind of help me reboot. When I've kind of been most successful and actually often at my happiest, it's always been within teams, even if that's just a team of two, because I think there's something about being successful together that is so much more powerful than being successful by yourself.
Oh, Sarah, it's heartwarming.
Even yesterday, I was doing a training course yesterday, and usually Helen and I do our training together, but I was doing one by myself, and I was like, I really missed you. I missed our team. Dream team weren't together.
Our squiggly team. We will reconvene together soon.
So today, before I get lost in a world of team sports, which I will come back to actually later in the podcast, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some of our best and worst team experiences. Inevitably, the worst ones will be the ones that people will be more interested in, I'm sure. What we learnt, share some of our top tips, and as ever, finish with some resources that might be helpful. And actually today there are some incredibly useful resources on teams, effective teams, that can help you learn more if it's something you really want to kind of get into in more detail. So before we dive in, we always try to think about topics that are relevant for squiggly careers. Helen, how do you think teams and teamwork is changing as the world that we all work in is becoming so much more squiggly?
So I was reflecting on this when you kind of we ask each other questions before we start recording, just to reassure you that we do some prep for these sessions. And I was reflecting on the question about how teams are changing. And I think teamwork has always been important. Like if I think about like industrialization and lots of people kind of working in factories and the Henry Ford kind of things, to go back to that, a lot of how teams work then was about productivity and efficiency and output rate. And actually, I still think those things are really important now. We've made them a bit more sexy when we talk about productivity and apps, but they're still kind of important outputs of effective teams now, productivity and efficiency. But I think what's changed is the way teams work together. So, if you go back, you don't even have to go back that far. Teams were often together physically in the same space. And what's changed now is that more often teams are not in the same place. They're either in different countries or maybe they're working remotely. I think teams also form in a more agile way. So it's not necessarily the same group of people who keep coming together. You can have different models of what's the shoe company? Zappos. And
yes,
they have almost like circles where they will bring people together for projects, and it's like agile working and things like that. So I think the structure of teams, where teams exist, how they're structured, how long they stay together, it's much more fluid. And technology is a big enabler of that. And that's really sort of that's kind of what's sort of happening with squiggly careers. Squiggly careers have got all that change. Technology is a big part of the fluidity of people moving around their careers, and that's what's reflected in teams. So all that stuff that makes teams good and valuable, still important, but how you achieve it now, I think, is very different. And therefore, the skills that you need to make a really strong team are slightly different, because it's not about just talking to the person next to you. You suddenly have to be able to think, how does a great leadership team work, or how does a project team work, when we might have not known each other very well because maybe we've just come together for this initiative, or maybe we're all in different places and we just communicate through virtual means.
Yeah, I think that to me is a really important point, is that now you can't rely on almost the physical environment and the standardisation of work to make sure that teams work effectively. I think previously there would have just been some of the kind of constructs of how we all worked, in terms of we turned up to the same place, we sat next to the same people who were probably the people we worked with every day, or however you were working. And that just meant that you had to kind of, you were almost like forced to work in a team, depending on how good it was. Whereas now, just that flexibility means that you've actually got to really think about it. I think be more conscious about teamwork and dedicate probably more time and thought to it, because it's not just going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So should we start off by thinking about the best teams that we've both been part of? So what was your number one team?
Number one team? I feel really bad picking out my number one team, because I'm thinking, what some of my
and
team members
like,
are listening
said
to
that.
So
you said that. I was like, she's not going to like that.
I'm not going to like that. One of the number one teams that I've worked for. So I'm going to go back to when I used to work for E.ON. And when I worked for E.ON, I was an innovation venture manager, and I reported into a really visionary leader called Phil Gilbert at E.ON. And we were pulling together a team. I know, you know, I love Phil. And we were pulling together a team from the ground up, basically. Phil had been given a remit to build an innovation team, and we had to build it from scratch. And to begin with, there were only three or four of us on the leadership team defining what the business, it was called Ignite, what that business was going to achieve. And it meant that we got to recruit new people internally and outside of E.ON to form a team. And I just remember that there were some challenges in that team. We were trying to do stuff at pace, and it was really hard, and we're trying to kind of go against the grain with the business. But I think one of the things that really struck me that Phil led in the formation of that team was he used like a football analogy, but it was probably even more than an analogy. He big football fan. I think Manchester United, I think. And anyway, he drew up a football team. I don't even know how many people are in a football team, but he drew it up. And the idea was we
11.
Had lots. Thanks for that. Stored in the brain for a minute. We had lots of people that were applying these roles. And what Phil made us do was look at like complementary skills and behaviours. So rather than just thinking about that's an individual star, that's an individual star, and offering a job to all of them and realizing that you've just got a team of like 30 individual stars, he forced a process where we looked at the football team And said, okay, well, who's got the behaviours that would maybe be in this type of role? Who's got the behaviours that would be maybe more supportive or collaborative? And it just, it meant that we got amazing talent, but we really thought about the structure of the team. Now, I know that not everybody is in the luxury of being able to build a team. Like, that's the only time in my career I've actually been able to do that, build that team completely from scratch, yeah, of a size. But what it's sort of, what stuck with me was thinking about the people in the team, their skills and their behaviours and how they complement each other. And it definitely taught me that it'll never be perfect because people are people and they come to work with their emotions and their experiences. And however much you think about all the logic of building a great team, people are still people. But I do think that went a long way to increasing the ability of the team to collaborate and connect and not just have people who are just individual stars.
I always think what you're ultimately trying to do with any team is make sure that the whole is bigger than the sum of the parts. So it's not about, back to your kind of your football analogy, which is a sentence that doesn't make any sense to me.
The irony of it.
Yeah, you know nothing about any sport. But it's not always the teams with the superstars that always perform the best. And we've recently done something actually in my current role where as a leadership team, we did something called StrengthScope, where, so this is not a team that, you know, that our founders who I kind of work for now have been able to build, you know, simultaneously from scratch in the way that you've just described. Because as you said, that actually, it very rarely happens unless you're creating a business or you may be creating a new team. But what that allowed us to do, even though, you know, it's more kind of retrospective, is reflect on the contribution that we all make to a team in a very sort of explicit and transparent way to then work out, oh, okay, well, actually, maybe some of those things you don't get to see in someone every day, or maybe you don't know people that well. So you suddenly realise people have got two or three strengths maybe that you hadn't realised before. And then you can start thinking about how do we leverage these things together? How do we make sure that we're kind of a collective rather than just going, oh, from a distance, someone's really great at this thing. It's actually, oh, no, well, together, this is where we would be particularly strong. And mm-hmm. we looked for like commonalities. So where do quite a few people have certain same sort of strengths? And then actually who within the room doesn't have that commonalities? Because actually those people are particularly powerful because they bring a different point of view and a different perspective.
I think as well, but on that point, it's having Phil as the leader who cared about it so much. I mean, it was all of our job. He got us all yeah. into it to really debate it, but he really, really cared. And then that about the structure of the team and who we were bringing into it. And that sort of set the tone for what was going to be important about this team. So I think for me, the best teams that I've worked for have got leaders who really care about the formation of the team, the dynamics of the team, and not just the work that's got to be done by that team.
Yeah, I suppose it's both how you do your work as well as what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And people understanding that makes a really big difference. If I think about all the best leaders I've worked for, they understand and prioritise the importance of any team, whether it's a leadership team or a working team, spending time together. And not making excuses for not doing that because of, you know, other work commitments or things, you know, there's always something you could be doing, you know, and everybody has that kind of long to-do list. But it's almost there. It becomes a necessary part of your job and what you do rather than something that gets added on every 6 months because people think we should do it.
Yeah. What about you then?
Well, my example's a bit different. Obviously, I've gone with the sports one.
Oh, no, no more sport.
This is going to be one of my few podcasts where I'm ever going to get to talk about sport. So I had to go really far back as well to come up with one. So I'm going to talk about the time when our under-18 netball team at school won the county championship.
Is it because you just want to talk about winning a county championship?
Yeah, but so let me tell you more because I suspect you're fascinated. So firstly, we obviously outperformed all of our peers, lots of the other schools would have definitely had better resources than us. You know, we didn't have a good sports hall. We hadn't got loads of equipment. We were just a sort of very standard school. But we were all collectively really committed to our kind of shared vision.
It's the underdog story. It feels like
yeah,
a film.
That's,
feel like
yeah, a, exactly. Yeah. Honestly, I remember. So I was pretty committed to, at the time, obviously wanting to go to university, but apparently not quite as committed as I was to winning the under-18 netball championship, because I remember going to look at a university with a friend who was also in the same netball team, and we left partway through to make sure that we could get back in time for like playing some of these games, like in preparation. So I prioritised netball over like the rest of my education, essentially, at that time. But that felt like the right call. And what's really interesting, when I was reflecting on this, ready for today, thinking about, okay, so why was that team so good? I don't think it was because we had loads and loads of superstars. I think it's because we were the ultimate team, as in we had all of the right people in the right places. We were collectively very committed to it. So, you know, we were training. We probably did train more than the other teams. You know, we choose to proactively practice and do more training. There was never any kind of blaming of people who made mistakes, mm-hmm. which actually is a really big deal, because in netball, you've got seven players. If somebody dropped the ball or made a mistake, it can feel quite obvious that it's you that's not scored that goal, or you've dropped the ball and the other team have got it. But actually, it was always, well, no, you kind of win together, lose together type mentality. Mm-hmm. Even talking about it is making me really happy. And do you know what is also fascinating? And we talked about kind of the impact a leader can have. I actually can't remember our coach.
Very interesting.
And I can't
poor
really
coach remember, who coached you to success.
And I can't remember that much about her. I remember her being female, but that's kind of about it. And I think from memory, she perhaps wasn't like that into netball, you know, like PE teachers have to do loads of different sports. But we almost took the ownership for what it was we wanted to do and what we wanted to achieve, and didn't rely on, I guess, that person to do the hard work for us. And we sort of accepted that as a team, we needed to work together to do what we wanted to do, which sounds like incredibly sort of mature, but I think we were all actually just incredibly competitive. And you know, that whole thing of like, you really hate the other schools. I don't even know why now. You're like, oh, I hate that school. Okay.
What did you learn from all of that, Sarah? I feel like we're going down age 18 school competing.
Firstly, winning is awesome. So that's the first thing I learned. But then we like crashed out at the next level really quickly. So just in case anyone's thinking you went on to be superstars, we absolutely didn't. I think what I did learn, and actually from listening to kind of your story, your probably much more relevant and pertinent story about actually being at work and me reminiscing about winning a county championship.
It's fine.
Is three things. One, you've got to have a shared vision as a team. You've all got to know why you're doing what you're doing, and how will you know if you've been successful? Because if you think, well, we know if we'll be successful if we achieve these sales or this amount of new clients or this increase in customer satisfaction, if you think one of those things is really important and actually there are other people in the team who are prioritising something completely different, doesn't matter how brilliant you all are or how well you know each other, you're never going to get to the same kind of output, because you're not all going in the same direction. So that shared vision of why you're all there, what you're there to do, and regularly reflecting on, you know, how do you know if you've been successful? Sometimes it's very tangible, it's very black and white, playing mm-hmm. netball, you either win or you lose. But, you know, in somewhere like an Eon, you could probably understand as you were going, you know, are we making progress versus our objectives? Are we getting really good feedback from the organisation in terms of the impact of our team? There are lots of evidence points that you can look to work out, are you achieving that shared vision? So that'd be number one. Number two, which I did actually just kind of mention with the example, is it's not the job of the leader, or certainly not just the job of the leader, to create and build a brilliant team. Everybody has to take accountability for being part of that process and to behave in the way that you agree in terms of your kind of ways of working. And I sometimes have seen this with teams where people just sort of look to the person leading that team and expect them to do almost like all of the hard work in terms of accountability and shaping that team. You know, if you're part of a team and you're listening to this and thinking, well, we could do, yeah, this part of our team isn't working very well, often, you know, there's nothing stopping you from taking some accountability for doing something about that, even if it's in a kind of really small way.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I often feel the weight of expectation to do that for the team, both upwards and sort of down for my team. And I definitely don't have all the answers or all of the time to do that. And I think it'd be quite empowering for the individuals and also respected by the manager, providing the manager's in the right mindset, I think, to do that for them and say, these are the ideas, this is what we think is important. I think that's such a positive mindset for an individual to have, that they can do that work.
Yeah, and our last kind of, I guess, almost reflection that we both had on our kind of best teams is that when you're part of a brilliant team, you feel like you're being yourself. So you feel sort of safe to disagree, to challenge, to express your point of view, because that's how, I guess, teams have diversity of ideas, of thought. And you know that ultimately you're all there to try and do the same thing. But and everything that you're doing and all the challenge that you have is all in pursuit of that thing. And if that's done in the right way and you've agreed how you're going to kind of work together, then that's really positive, because by having a number of different perspectives, everyone kind of bringing themselves, no one's having to spend time or energy on managing themselves or thinking, well, if I say this thing, what impact is that going to have on people's perception of me? Or, you know, does that mean that people won't like me in the same way? So there's not, you know, you don't have the same kind of level of almost, I guess, having to bring a persona to a team or to work versus going, yeah, I'm just bringing my authentic, brilliant self, because we're all just here just trying to do the best thing.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I learned something else as well. I did some research, Sarah. Would you believe?
Very impressive.
I know. I did some research. I'd normally
you basically
do
said that because you wanted me to say, like, well done.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I like a little bit of praise every now and again. Hard to come by. No, the article that I found was really, really interesting. So I think you and I both, you know, we're really passionate about how teams are formed. I am a little bit of a geek at some times, and I found a really good article on Harvard Business Review called "The New Science of Building Great Teams." So it unsurprisingly takes a scientific approach to what makes teams work, and they basically their researchers put these, I couldn't quite know what they would have looked like, but they put like devices on people in teams that then monitored their interactions with other people so that they could collect
devices.
Lots of data. I don't know what the devices, but they put like some trackers on people basically in teams.
Robots are going to start running the teams.
It was less of a robot. I think it was more of a monitoring thing. It looked at how many times people interacted, and I don't quite know. There was no picture of said device, but it got them lots of data. And what they realised from the data was that the most important predictor of team success was their patterns of communication, and it was as significant as all of the other factors of kind of effective teams combined. So those other factors were individual intelligence of people in a team, the skill of individuals in the team, the personalities, and the substance of discussion. Actually, the patterns of communication was more important than any of that stuff combined as a predictor of team success, I thought was really interesting. And then,
so what would a pattern of communication be?
So they talked about the number and nature of interactions. So basically, teams that don't talk to each other have fewer interactions, and they have weaker patterns of communication. And they talked about a test that they did where they, in a call centre environment, because I think it's quite measurable, they synced up all of the lunchtime. So they took a team, they went kind of, I guess, counter to what would seem logical to do. They took the entire team offline to have a break together, whereas what the manager had been doing was almost like
rotating
so that the team was not down at the same time. But they took the entire team offline together for like a 10, 15, 20 minute break, whatever it was. And so that would encourage interaction and communication, increase the patterns of communication between the individuals and the team. And what happened was, I think they measured like average call handling time. That dropped. Basically, all the metrics for success in that call center went up, despite the fact that the team had to kind of down tools all at the same time.
That's interesting.
It was really interesting. They tried it in different settings and they realized that, yeah, this patterns of communication thing, how teams interact was the most important predictor of success. They did some research in the article on what's more effective between face-to-face communication, video conferences, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, actually, yeah.
Face-to-face was the most effective, and then they said followed by video conference, but video conference starts to fall apart when you go past a certain number of people being on the call.
Yeah.
But what to a couple of things that just really stuck with me on the best teams from based on this research, they summarise it into three things, which all begin with E. You know how I love like models that all have like models that are like all in threes that begin with the same letter. Are, like,
that's why these people do these, you know, so they can like sell you their books and that kind of stuff.
Sold. I'm sold.
It's got but a model.
The three things in summary. So energy. So the best teams have energy, and that is measured by the number and nature of interactions. So basically, the team interact more together and it's more often face-to-face than not. It's quite interesting in kind of remote work.
Yeah.
We'll come back on that second. The second is engagement. The aim is for equal levels of conversation, so participation in the conversation, but also equal levels of listening. So I think that's quite interesting. If you've got, they talked about in teams, maybe you've got a couple of pockets where there's like really high engagement, but other people don't get to talk as much. So they're thinking about how you're trying to get a level playing field for engagement. And the last thing was exploration, which I hadn't really thought of. And this was that they said that high performing teams seek outside perspectives. So they connect with other teams and they bring that perspective back into the original team.
Curiosity,
and it drives innovation and new perspectives within the original team, like the host team. So I just thought, so it's such a good article. I learned a lot from reading it. I'll read it again, and there's little exercises and it shows you how they measured the teams. When we share the links, we'll include that one in there, but that was some of their thoughts: energy, engagement and exploration of what makes a great team.
On that point around equal listening, I once did an exercise, which I'm guessing you must have done as well, because we did the same development program, where an external observer comes in and watches you as a group do an exercise, and you don't really know why they're watching. And to be honest, after 2 minutes of reading the brief that you're working through, you've forgotten they're there anyway. Even though there's somebody in the room, they're sort of sitting very kind of unobtrusively to the side, and they just sort of say, off you go, have a go at doing this exercise. And they, what they're actually looking for is your patterns of communication as a team, and they mark down by kind of almost like different colours the type of communicator you are and then how that works within a team. And almost particularly the one I always remember is how many times you interrupt somebody. And I bet you were trying really hard there not to interrupt me. And often sometimes you interrupt because of enthusiasm or in support of people, but they talk about just how kind of the negative impact that can have because you've interrupted somebody's like flow of thought. And you know, no one's perfect. It's really hard not to do that some of the time. But actually, I was in a meeting the other day where I just watched a number of people just do that. So no one ever quite finished a sentence. And it was all because of excitement and, you know, came from lots of good reasons. But then you start to get worried, like nobody's actually quite getting to fully articulate what it is that they were trying to talk about. And I was part of a team where we did that together. And then it was really funny because then as the leadership team, we were all so aware of it. Like, no, everyone would like have, there'd always be like this pause after someone would finish a sentence and everyone would be like, are we done? Are we ready? And then, so it took us a bit of practice, but it was really useful, particularly I think for the more introverted people, because actually it gives them more time and space to contribute. It encourages that equality of contribution. And actually, if you're kind of more extroverted, you're kind of encouraged to spend a bit more time sort of listening and reflecting. So I think it just helps with the dynamics of a team.
I remember the exercise and I remember the marks. I did interrupt people, as probably people listening to this podcast get that. And the reason that I was always interrupting people, because I think there were types of interruptions that were noted, was because I had a need to add value. So I would be like, oh yeah, and this. Oh, and have you read this? And have you tried this?
Yeah.
Because like that's how I sort of I don't know how, a lot of the time how I contribute, but it did totally make me realise that I sort of think, oh, that's a positive thing because I'm adding value to somebody. But actually, if it's distracting them from their train of thought, or I'm preempting, I've assumed what they're about to say, it's not that useful. So yeah, it's an interesting exercise. I think you can probably replicate it for yourself in a team by, particularly if you are one of the more noisy people in the team, by taking more of an observer role and just looking at what the dynamic is. Where's the share of voice? What's that level of interruption? Is it what's the kind of tone of the conversation? Is it aggressive? Is it collaborative? And finding a way to play that back to people. I think that would be a really powerful thing to do for a team, to be a bit of a mirror to its behaviours.
Definitely. Should we move on to worst teams?
The bad stuff.
Because I was thinking about this and I was like, actually, it's quite hard because I think most teams go through ebbs and flows. You know, sometimes they're better than others. Team dynamics change quite a lot. But I did try to think about, right, we always try to be kind of very honest. When have I had a really bad team experience? And am I going first?
Or yeah, you go first. Yeah, you go first. And I'll see how honest you are.
Yeah. Well, so my worst team experience was actually when I first started my MBA at Warwick University. The way I did my MBA was you went for a week at a time and you were given an assignment to actually do during that week, as well as all your lectures and various things. So you were put in a team from day one. So this is on a Monday. And then by the Friday, you had to have answered a question of some description, come to a conclusion, and it had to then be presented to everybody on the Friday, and you got a mark which contributed. So it was a group mark, but it contributed to your individual mark. So it was a, you know, quite emotive, quite stressful situation. And that first week, so that first module was, and I was in that team, was absolutely horrendous. So bad that I genuinely nearly didn't go back. Do you know what? I really wasn't ready for it.
I remember the phone call. I remember you called me and you were upset.
Did I?
Yeah, you were upset.
Yeah, actually, I think I actually did get genuinely really upset because I think I was there like full of, you know, enthusiasm and really excited to be there. And the team dynamics were really tough. So when I stop now and think about it, nobody knew each other. So you're suddenly with these 8 or 9 different people where, and there's no time to get to know anyone. You'd literally introduce yourself and then you're straight in with a task that is very time pressured, quite stressful, on a topic you don't know very much about. Everyone is trying to prove themselves because it's week one, and there is a bit of, and almost in hindsight now, I'm like, I'm not sure what anyone was trying to necessarily prove, because you know, you're there to do your MBA, you're already doing the MBA. But I guess there's probably something about the nature of the people who choose to do those things. It's probably quite a competitive environment, or people maybe feel like they want to sort of demonstrate that they should be there. And it felt just incredibly, you know, there was kind of quite a lot of disagreement, there's quite a lot of conflict, there was no one leader. So, you know, within 8 or 9 people, no one was automatically obviously in charge, but then almost everyone tried to simultaneously be in charge, and it was awful. For something I was looking forward to so much, I think that's probably why it threw me, because then I just thought, it was very much a microcosm of a 1 week experience. And actually, we, as a team, we definitely progressed and got better. But I think the real thing for me there was that what would have been brilliant and what we should have done, and it would have made a massive difference for that first week, if we'd have taken an hour at the very start of, you know, when we started to have time together, to just get to know each other a little bit more and talk about how we were going to approach the week, how we were going to work together, how we were going to think about the question that we had to answer, that would have been worth its weight in gold. Because actually what we did was we went straight to the what.
Yeah.
Like, what do we need to do? Let's divide up the task. Let's all go off and do it. And everyone did different stuff. And some people did nothing. And some people just sat on the computer by themselves and no one quite knew what they were doing. So it was just, it was a real disaster. I would have hated, you know, like if there'd been hidden cameras in that room, I just don't think I could have watched it back.
Oh, I'm laughing, but I do remember you upset, which I feel really mean now I've lost, because it doesn't feel great. That's the point, isn't it? Bad teams, not great for the business, not great for the individuals. Like, nobody wins out of a bad team.
No, and I think that's the, so that was the thing about, there was no, in hindsight, what would I have done differently? Yeah, to even have suggested to have maybe spent a small bit, a portion of time actually getting to know each other, I think would have been really valuable. And I think back to our squiggly careers point, more and more people, I think, will spend time working in project teams where this is way more likely to be a reality. You may be suddenly working in a cross-functional team or in a remote team where you've got, you know, 6 people together, you've got to deliver something within whatever period of time. Now, I think I'd always be like, just before we dive in, let's just stop because it will be worth it. And also knowing, you know, there's that, how does it go with that team dynamic things where it's like form, storm,
norm, perform,
isn't it?
Yeah.
That's worth looking up if people are interested in, I guess, the behaviours of every team. So forming is obviously when you're just together. Storming is like obviously the tough period where people are like trying to all find their way. Then you get into the kind of what are the norms, and then you really perform. If you've got to do that very quickly, I think you have to work out like tools and techniques to start to get your team all working collaboratively in a very short space of time. And I think we sort of just ignored that whole process and went straight into, okay, well, performing. And I think you almost can't miss those first three things. And I think I experienced what happens when you just try to get to perform.
It reminds me when I used to work for Capital One quite a long time ago, I was like a marketing project manager whilst I was there. And at the start of every project, I mean, I think this is actually a phase of the Prince 2 methodology for project management, but every project would start with a project charter where right. You would get your stakeholders in the room and you would talk about how do we want to run this project as a team, because the team would have been pulled together for that initiative. It might be launching a new credit card or, you know, a change to a business thing, and you would say, okay, well, we want to meet weekly, we want to have collaboration, right. We want to have clear leadership, we want to only have, you know, four people in a meeting so it's more productive, whatever the rules of engagement, if you like, were for the team. Just that notion, I mean, a project charter feels a bit formal, but it's that thinking of every time you bring a team together, like, what, let's talk as a team about how we want the team to operate. But, you know, I've done those like MBA situations, Sarah. It is hard when everyone's like, first, if that's the first time the group's been together. I don't even know if you'd said that, whether everyone had been like, oh, she's that one, is she?
Yeah, probably. I think that's okay though, because I think I am that one now. Anyway, I'm just more comfortable that I am that
that
one.
That is who you are.
Tell me about your worst team.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm not going to name the name of the company because it is a company and I've got to want to be fair. But I'll talk about the situation. So I went in to join a leadership team in a company that I have worked for, and it really didn't work. And it wasn't because of the individuals. The individuals are actually all really, really lovely people. But the team just was really dysfunctional. And again, it wasn't any aggression. It just didn't sit together. So we'd have these leadership meetings, which would basically involve everybody updating each other about their area and then having lunch and just talking about our lives. But the team never really got above that. It was like a team that updated each other and shared information rather than tried to improve something or had a shared outcome. And how that felt was, it just felt like a bit of wasted time, to be honest. I felt like I was in this team environment having all day leadership meetings and for no point, because I could just read an email that had that update in it and I could talk to you by your desk. And it just didn't connect. And I think it was because we were putting to a team because of an organisational structure where they just lumped these functions together. But actually the functions were quite disconnected and could operate independently. And I tried, you know, I tried to say, like, how can we improve these things together?
But so you were that one. You did it.
I was that one as well. And because I care about teamwork and actually really enjoy it when it works. But it didn't. It just felt like it was a pointless exercise. You know, we even had some external facilitators come in to try and do it. But it just felt like you were having a conversation on the day that never stuck, not because people didn't care, but because all of the functions of this particular team could operate very independently from each other. And so we would only get together for these leadership meetings and it just felt a little bit pointless. And so that, just to me, there's a learning in that just because it's called a team on a structure, if it's all been put together on an org chart, that isn't necessarily enough to make it a powerful team. I think a powerful team has to be connected by a shared purpose or agenda or outcome that that collection of people are moving towards. Otherwise, it is just a collection of people that don't need to spend a day with each other doing team building.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's actually increasingly almost like the bravery that leaders and organisations need to have, is that just because, like, it sounds like you were kind of put together as a leadership team because, you know, you're all at a similar level, so it's like, okay, we should get together. But it's that thing of like, well, we should get together to what end? Like, you should only get together if then there's going to be some value that you're going to add back to the organisation or back to your teams. And almost then having the confidence that if that's not happening, actually, then that's okay, because you might have other teams. You might be better spending time with the people who are part of your team or with another function. It doesn't always have to work in that hierarchical way. I think, yeah, there's that agility of how teams come together. You know, the example from the Harvard Business Review thing about the best teams have got that exploration thing. Would be a team connecting with another one rather than maybe the one it sits with in a structure. And I'll be, by and large, I have been in leadership meetings where it does make sense for the functions to be together. But it is just that example where it just seemed to be a bit thrown together. And I was like, well, this is just a collection of sub-teams and we don't connect. And it wasn't very motivating. I felt like it was a bit of a waste of time. And I felt like we were trying to force an agenda. And my learning was definitely that point around shared purpose and how important that is.
Yeah. So the three things then we've learned from the teams that have not been quite so good, rather than like the number one worst team. Number one, the point about you need to have agreed shared norms and behaviours, which essentially in kind of more straightforward language is ways of working. And often you can feel like maybe if you're part of the team, that that's not your role to do that, but maybe that's the role of the leader. But I do think there are some questions that anyone could ask that start with, how do we want to? So that how do we want to is a really nice way to include people in developing ways of working for a team. So that could be, how do we want to approach meetings? How do we want to make decisions together? How are we going to avoid duplication? So you're essentially in your how do we want to, you're asking we, you're doing a collective, you're not assuming the answer. But in the second part of the statement, you are acknowledging that there is probably something we need to talk about that's not right. And I think it's a smart and kind of emotionally intelligent way of involving people in getting to some ways of working or shared norms. And it's something that I use all the time. If I sort of start to spot a bit of a gap or that we're getting duplication, rather than just getting frustrated, which I think is really easy to do, or thinking, well, that person's not doing the right thing, or maybe I'm not doing the right thing, just asking that how do you want to question is really powerful. So that was number one. Number two, I think look for, if you're part of a team and it's maybe quite a big team, look for allies in that team. And collective role modelling, I think, can be really powerful. I think when you're part of a team and you see a couple of people acting or behaving in a certain way who are maybe being collaborative, who are, you know, maybe being those people trying to work out what the ways of working are, it does start to hold other people to account. You know, if you notice yourself interrupting somebody, apologising for that and saying, oh, sorry, I interrupted you there, keep going. Or if you notice that someone hasn't contributed, asking them what they think. Those kind of things people do notice, and you can then see that. I've seen it time and time again when I've spent time with people who do those sorts of things. It then encourages other people to do more of that and to act a bit more as a team. And then I guess our last one was about teams not having the collective purpose, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, which I kind of got onto when I was talking about my example of that team that wasn't, I nearly said the name, the team in Company X that wasn't kind of working. I really like that point you made, by the way, about collective role modelling. I think that's really interesting, like what behaviours positively and negatively are a team collectively role modelling. Mm. That is something for me to take away. So should I do some top tips then for people?
Go for it.
So top tips then, I think, you know, we've talked about this, but to be really explicit, some things that we think that you can go away from this podcast and do differently. The first is invest time in building and contributing to part of being an effective team. This doesn't happen by accident. Actually, you've got to be looking at how the team is working, reflecting on that, maybe testing a few new things, doing that observer role we've mentioned. We've gone through quite a lot of ideas in this podcast, but just being really conscious about how a team functions and where you want it to be and what might need to change to get there is really, really important. And you can do that. You can have that discussion as a team, but then people can take on some individual responsibility following that. But super, super important. So that's tip one. Tip two is to assess how effective your current team is. And there are lots of different tools that you can use for that. We're going to talk about a team profile role assessment when we go through our resources. But I think there are different tools that you can use to assess your current team. You know, have you got a team of 10 people and you've all got the same kind of team profile? Maybe you're all, some people have done like an insights or a discovery wheel where you get different colours. A lot of people seems to stick with people. But yeah, for people that know what I'm talking about, maybe you've got a whole team of red people. What does that mean for how you're coming across with your stakeholders? What does that mean for how you're connecting with each other? Because maybe you're operating as 10 very driven individuals rather than a supportive team or a particularly analytical team. You'll know what I'm talking about if you've done the colour wheel before.
So that sounds like it's like interior decoration.
Yeah, interior team decoration. So that's that second one. Whatever tool you use, find a way to assess how your effective your current team is, and that gives you some specificity on the gaps that you might want to address. And the last thing I think can be quite interesting is to take some inspiration from other teams outside of your context. So, you know, I've mocked Sarah a little bit for all of her sporting references, but I do think there's a lot you can learn from how sports teams come together, particularly around like events like the Olympics. And you'll find that the coaches, they'll have done some press interviews where they'll be sharing, this is how I brought the team together. Or even like military scenarios or just other organisations in different countries. There, you can often learn a lot from how teams come together. And I think more so in high profile situations, even like how political teams come together to get someone elected. There's just some insights that you can take and you can think, oh, what would happen if our team operated like that. It's actually something that I do when I work for a brand. So if I work for Microsoft, I will look at other brands and I'll say, oh, what would happen if we were a bit more like X brand, or we borrowed some of those characteristics from that brand, what would that mean for us? Because it's just a way of changing someone's perspective on how something else works, and in this context it's the team.
And often I think it's really interesting to look at teams that have maybe outperformed, either maybe against the odds, or that you maybe hadn't expected to do quite so well. Like, what was it? What were they doing
differently? Like the netball team, Sarah, the underdogs.
Exactly. Do you want me to start taking you to some sporting events?
No, it's fine.
Is that really what you're telling me?
No, that memory will stay with me forever. That's enough. Thank you.
And actually, if you do like a sporting analogy, there is a book called Will It Make the Boat Go Faster? And this is about the guys that won a gold medal for rowing. And they were definitely the underdogs. And actually, if you listen to the commentary, one of the guys, Ben, who was in the boat, and the commentary of the race, you can tell from the commentators they don't expect them to win. Because, you know, they hadn't had a track record of necessarily always winning previously, and they really changed and adapted their approach, and they were so single-minded in terms of every single decision they made as a team. They kept just asking themselves the question, will this make the boat go faster? I absolutely love it. I think it's a really kind of smart strategy, and it just really helped them in terms of how they spent their time, how they spent their money, how they dedicated all their resources. So if you do like a sports book, that's one. If you want other recommendations, ask me on Twitter or Instagram, because I could talk about lots of interesting golf, rugby biographies, programmes to watch.
But moving on yeah, to sure. other resources.
Go on,
you found a really good one. What, the one that you told me about, the New York Times one.
Yeah, this one. I've not seen it before. So on the New York Times, they have a section, and it's a section really about leadership, the world of work generally. So actually, there is a plethora of really good articles, and they're more sort of opinion pieces or editorial pieces. So they're longer form, more detailed, and there's a great one on how to build the perfect team, which we'll include as part of the resources. I think we've mentioned some of it before, but some of it is based on the Google work they did on something called Project Aristotle, which was basically trying to diagnose the perfect team. And it's useful because it also addresses some of the myths about perfect teams, and, you know, you just need brilliantly smart people, or actually it's quite hard to find correlations between brilliant teams. So generally that New York Times, I was like, wow, there's just so much good stuff there. You know, even just stuff like why everyone should take a lunch break. So some just fun, straightforward things through to
and it's
some
called
quite detailed
what
articles.
What Google Learned from Its Quest to Build the Perfect Team.
Yeah.
We will share the link, but just in case you want to get searching straight away, what Google Learned to share. Google Learned from Its Quest to Build the Perfect Team. It's a long title. And I've got one as well. I mentioned it earlier about team roles theory. If you want to use something to assess your current team, what the profile looks like, this is on 123test.com, and it will give you, you complete it, it's quite quick, it's maybe about 30 questions, and you just have to pick from a pair each time, and it will give you your profile, and then you can compare that with everybody else's on the team to see how many of you've got the same profile. So for example, I came out as my number one, it won't be a surprise to Sarah, my number one in the profile thing was that I'm an explorer, followed by a driver and a chairman, and then the one that I was lowest on was a completer. I got three points of being a completer, but never mind.
Out of what, 100?
I don't actually know. My top score was 19, so there's obviously that's the distance between them, but it was low, and unsurprisingly, I think. But we will, as ever, when the podcast goes live, it goes live every Tuesday, so you can go to LinkedIn or Twitter, or you can find us on Instagram, where we're amazing if at Instagram. You can just search for us any of those places, and when I post the detail on the podcast, I'll always put in the comments all of the links to everything we talk about and resources for you to go and explore some more of this stuff. So next week, we are going to be talking about how to get promoted. And this has come from a couple of people that have asked us to look at this. And we'll talk about Sarah and I's experience. And we're also going to go and gather some information from our network about some of their stories about how they got promoted and what they think has been really useful. So hopefully that should be a really actionable thing for you to look at. And I think if you're going to get promoted, this is not like I want to get promoted next week. Some of this stuff takes a bit longer. So maybe even if you're not thinking about wanting to be promoted now, I think it's good to know the activities that you can start to work on to be sort of part of that journey for promotion. So that's next week. We are also going to do in July another Q&A podcast. We did one of these back in, was it May? Or June? May. And this is just where we get some different questions that maybe aren't big enough for a whole episode, but we want to answer because we take our community very seriously and all of your suggestions. So we'll gather those up. So you can either email those to us at getintouch@amazingif.com. You can put them to us in all those different social media places, or what someone has done recently on the wonder of our on iTunes on the podcast review. I will read it to you really quickly. They've said, this is from William PH Dyer, and he has said in our podcast review, 5 stars. Thanks, William. Recommended this podcast so many times to workmates. This podcast will help you put in place ways to structure conversations that are effective and fruitful, which is nice. And then he said, PS, if you could do an episode on managing upwards and managing stakeholders, that would be very useful. So that will be one, for example, that William's put forward that we will put into that Q&A that we're going to do in July. So if you've
I've
got any more,
that.
Have a look.
If you're still listening... Thank you.
I think I see him on Instagram as well. So you can put those. We love it when they come with 5-star reviews, but you can put those questions anywhere you want to, and we'll pull those all together for that July session. And I think that is it for now. I've told you where to get in touch with us. Done a bit of a plug to get some ratings and reviews, which helps us on iTunes. Thank you very much. And you can find us in all those places, and we'll be back with you next week.
Thanks very much for listening, everyone. See you soon. Bye.